Howdy, y'all. You're listening to The Managing Up Show. I'm Travis Weisgood, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Brandon Hayes and Nick Means. And this week, we're also joined by special guest Blythe Rocher.
Hi, I'm Blythe Rocher. I'm an engineering manager at Fastly, and I help manage a team that works on the main public-facing UI and the bulk of the main public-facing API at Fastly.
Awesome. So this week we're going to be talking about transitioning to management. Blythe has some experience doing that, as do the other three of us. All of us have slung some code at some point in our career, and to varying degrees, we all still do that or still try to do that in some of our cases. But that's going to be the topic today.
So Blythe, can you tell a little bit of your story about how you got into management and tell it from as early a point as you care to get into? I know you have sort of an interesting career arc in the first place, and I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. I'll give a little bit of background on the career. I actually used to be a scientist. I have a PhD in physical chemistry, which is a little unusual for the tech industry. So I went to undergrad and then grad school, finished a PhD, and then I was actually doing a postdoc, which requires a PhD. And I decided, you know, I think I could learn to code, and I think I might give that a run. And I was living in Atlanta at the time. I really got into the tech community there, and they really helped me a lot with advice of like how to make that career transition, what I might need to know to do that. So I got an internship at a company called Big Nerd Ranch. Funny story there, I made the same amount of money as an intern as I did as a postdoc, which requires a PhD. So that was pretty, it was a side transition. And obviously since then, I became a full-time developer. I worked at Big Nerd Ranch for a while. Then I left there to work at a company called The Groundwork, which was a company. It was kind of like a stealth startup that helped build the back end for the Hillary Clinton campaign before it launched. So when Hillary announced on day one, she needs to start taking in donations and email lists and things like that. So we set up all the infrastructure for that ahead of time. So that was a cool experience. I had to learn Python for that role. I was doing Ruby previously. Really good experience, but very intense job. So after we launched that and the Hillary team was able to hire their own engineers, I came to Fastly for a more stable, long-term job, you know, sustainable.
Yeah, from like a really intense project to like an actual job.
Yes, more of like a career type job, long-term. And so I started as an API engineer at Fastly, working on primarily Ruby APIs. And I did that, I guess, for about a year and a half.
So you were a full-time developer when you started at Fastly?
Yes.
Could you tell us a little more about your development role there and what prompted you to make the transition into management?
Yeah, I was a full-time developer on a team with other Ruby developers. We were doing primarily product delivery, new products, and then maintaining existing products. So my day-to-day was a lot of, the main focus obviously was writing code and delivering features. But with any engineering role, you have a lot of coordination, talking to product, talking to other stakeholders. I was on the API side, so I had to talk to front-end people. What are the needs here? So I was doing a lot of that already just in my day-to-day work. And also, I feel like I was sort of paying attention to team dynamics and sort of organizational dynamics a lot, maybe more than other people in my team. And I started to feel like, hey, I'm good. I can write the code and I'm good. I'm a good extra person to help deliver this code. But one of the things that I might be able to contribute more of is working on some of the coordination and planning and making things easier for my other teammates so that they can, you know, they might be much faster at writing code or might just enjoy it a lot more than me. So I thought, you know, this seems like a role that I could move into that could help the overall team and the company, of course.
So was there anybody that kind of came up to you before that? And it, was there any seed planting of somebody saying, hey, you have these skills. Maybe you should consider this as a career track. Was there anybody in your life that was kind of guiding you in that direction? Or was it more describing what you wanted to do and then figuring out that that was actually a role?
Yeah, some people had said, oh, you'd be a really good like team lead or manager. There had been some situations where, you know, as with engineering experience, you might have some fires that you have to put out, like, oh, something's broken in production and we really need to make some changes or roll back to get it fixed. And there had been some situations where I helped sort of communicate and manage those situations. And they were like, wow, you stayed really chill in that situation. Like, have you thought about maybe managing people or being some kind of lead, stepping into some leadership role? Now, just to be fair, I'm not always chill. Just my role in that particular deploy allowed me to be chill more than other times. So some people had noticed and suggested, hey, maybe you could be a manager. But one thing that was great about Fastly is that no one pressured me into being a manager. I mean, as y'all probably know, there's with startups, there's always plenty of need for more management. You know, the company gets bigger, you need to hire more developers, you need more managers to help coordinate the work of those people. But at Fastly, it didn't feel like, oh, you've been here, we need a manager, so now you're a manager. In fact, my manager at the time was really reluctant to make me a manager in terms of he wanted to make sure that this was something that I wanted to do and I didn't just feel like I was being forced into it by other people. So we had several conversations and I remember him being like, you know, we talked about this. Are you sure? Are you sure? And I said, I'm sure. I don't know how to be more clear. This is it. Like, please. And so after that, he put the steps in motion to help me transition into management.
I've been on the side of that it sounds like your boss was, where you've got somebody who's expressed an interest, but maybe hasn't done that management role before. Did y'all have any safeguards or things that you were going to be like, okay, these are the checkpoints along the way. Here's the 6-month plan to make sure that this is a fit.
Yeah. So it wasn't a super long listed out plan like that, but what we did do is we had this product that we wanted to deliver and we set up a team where I was sort of like the team lead, but not in charge of managing other people's careers yet. But I was managing people who were more senior than me and who had been at the company longer than me or managing people on the team, but not in a hierarchy type role. So what it let me do is start stepping into that role more, start focusing on that more, in terms of planning the work out and sort of like distributing the work and communicating that to outside stakeholders and things like that. And it was a really nice way to sort of like dip my toes into what might management look like and do I like it and am I okay at it?
What was the title of that role?
It didn't even really have a title. It was sort of just like a tech lead on a project. There was never an official title change.
So it seems like this is fairly recent. How new is this for you, Blythe?
I've been a manager for over a year now. So relatively recently, but it feels like a while ago.
Do you feel like you're settling yet or is it all still pretty new?
I feel like I am in the adolescence of my management career. I still have like painful learning experiences at times where I think, man, if I just had more experience, I might have handled that in a better way. It's like I can feel myself growing, sometimes painfully, like an awkward teenager. But I just try to learn from those experiences and say, you know, in the future, I'm going to handle this differently. And this is just part of growing as a manager.
So I have a question for you. In transitioning into management, you said you managed people that were more experienced than you. Was there anything surprising about that to you?
I think in getting to know those people, what was interesting was they had strengths, but maybe those strengths weren't in the same management skills that I was working on. So while they may have been great at delivering features, delivering great code, and even maybe teaching others about code. They weren't necessarily great at communicating across very different types of people. So product, other engineers, maybe marketing, SRE. So that sort of coordination and focusing on making sure that a project goes smoothly and features get delivered and people understand like timelines and things like that. Some of the more experienced people either weren't good at that or just didn't want to really focus on that. And they were better suited to just focus on how do I make this the best architecture that it should be. And so when you think, oh, this person's more senior than me, you think, oh, they're already good at all these things and they're better than me at these things. But it turned out to not be true. We had different complementary skill sets.
I'm curious about, was there anything in your prior career that you feel like prepared you for the management aspects of your job?
Definitely talking to people. So as a scientist, most people don't know what in the world you're working on. If you're publishing papers, you can't sort of speak at the level of like the language in a scientific paper. So you always have to figure out what level of understanding do people have. And as a manager, you have to always sort of figure out like, okay, where are you? Who am I talking to? What is my audience? What level of understanding do they have? And where should I start communicating? I think that's the biggest aspect. So I'll usually ask, you know, start with either like a mid-level question for like, okay, this is, you have medium understanding, and see like, okay, do they have that understanding? If not, let me adjust to simpler. Or if they do have it, okay, let's get more specific, more complicated. So I'm using that all the time.
From what I understand from a book that Travis recommended to me that I just got done reading, that actually is atypical for scientists, because I read a book by Alan Alda recently called Travis. I can't remember the name of it now.
If I understood you, would I have this look on my face?
Yes. And so Alan Alda is an actor, but he got involved with scientists by hosting a show, the Scientific American something. And in the process of hosting the show, realized, wow, scientists really struggle to communicate their ideas, and it's actually holding back their grants and some of their research and their ability to communicate these results, and founded a place called the Center for Communicating Science, I think. And it was actually targeted at scientists to try to help them communicate better. But exercising, using improv training to actually exercise a lot of the stuff that you're talking about understanding the level to the people are at before you talk to them, like you check their understanding of their level and then explain it to them in a way that resonates with them, that isn't too high level or too low level for them. So, but that is definitely like, I read that book, even though it was, you know, originated with scientists, it's really useful for anybody in our field. And it's kind of funny that that's where you came from, picked up those lessons and then brought them into engineering management.
Yeah, that's interesting. It may go back. My undergrad actually was a liberal arts school in Texas called Southwestern University. And I was a chemistry major there, but the bulk of my classes were outside of the sciences. So maybe if I had to attribute that to something, it would be probably the liberal arts education.
Yeah, we're back to liberal arts being the degree that everybody should have. I have a buddy who's got a philosophy BA. Is that a BA or a BS? Philosophy, a bachelor's in philosophy, and he thinks everyone should have to go through a liberal arts degree as your start, and then you can specialize outside of that. But for that reason, you focus on being well-rounded, and communication is a part of being a well-rounded individual.
So one question I have about the job, and I kind of want to open this to everybody, but Blythe, I'd like you to take the first crack at it, if you will. How clear was your role when you moved into becoming a manager?
It was not clear. It wasn't super clear. and I'm sure everybody has probably experienced this. Like, you're always learning, what is my role? What are some things I should be doing? What's outside of my role? So when I started you know the basics, like, okay, I have a project, I'm supposed to work on this, I'm working with this team, I need to help manage delivery of this project, and feature new features from an engineering aspect, so give technical advice at times, or help people find the right people to get advice from. And then I should also be, if I'm managing people directly, I should be communicating with them, having one-on-ones, making sure that their goals are met, and that they feel like they're growing and they're happy over time. And that seemed like the main gist of my job, but in terms of how to do those things and do them well and make the fewest mistakes, that is very vague.
Yeah, I don't think anybody comes into this, into one of these roles and knows, like, okay, here's the checklist of things, and if I do this over the first 6 weeks, I have been a success. And I've found and had to coach some folks on this, that the further along that path you move, the less well-defined it becomes. And I think that's the trait that really separates the folks who are really good, even team lead from engineering manager, and then again from engineering manager to a director and so on, is how well do you handle the ambiguity? I know a lot of engineers really want a very structured environment and a workplace, and they want to know, okay, what do I need to line up and knock down to actually be successful in my job? And as you move further and further away from contributing code being the thing that you do on a daily basis and being the metric that you're judged on, I think it becomes a bit fuzzier and fuzzier. What is the thing that I'm being judged on so that I can optimize that and do as well as I can?
Well, and even if you know what you're being evaluated on, there's so many levers to pull as a manager. There's so many things you could do. And we're really bad about bringing people into management and giving them absolutely no resources to figure out how to do that, what to do. We tell them what we expect. You're supposed to help your team deliver software more efficiently. How? Good luck, buddy.
So that's a question for you, Bythe. When you transitioned at Fastly, what organizational support was there for you?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. And I keyed off of that, the word resources, as soon as you said it. Fastly was super supportive of my transition. So we have a lot of internal training at Fastly that for different topics. They're usually maybe one day training or less than a day sometimes. So things like how to have difficult conversations, negotiating, different ways of communicating. So all of that was super helpful. I still am attending those as much as possible. And it's available to pretty much anyone at Fastly. Another really great resource, I took a general management course from Harrison Metal, which is a company that I extremely highly recommend. I would recommend this to anyone. They travel around. I did it in the Bay Area, but they're offering courses all over. And Fastly actually paid for that course, and it was a three-day course. And it was extremely great. Highly recommended.
That kind of brings in, if I were to collect that into a recommendation, it would be, if your company will pay you to get better at your job and you don't take advantage of that, that's 100% on you. Like, and you should be pushing your company to try to provide things for you, and you'll be shocked at what you can get out of that. I know that, I don't know how he found out about this, but I have a friend that manages people at Walmart and asked, hey, there's this management coach. This management coach has coached lots and lots of successful managers all the way up to VPs of engineering. And I want to hire this management coach to meet with me once a month and talk through my management challenges and see if I can get better at it. And they're like, yep, go for it. I think people will be surprised if you ask for some of these things. So the name of this one was called Harrison Metal.
Yeah, Harrison Metal is the name of the company. And the course was a general management course, but they have so many more offerings. I would love to take more. One other thing that I want to point out was that my manager at the time was extremely supportive and very good at sort of giving me advice and sort of helping me ease this transition into management. I would say that would be my advice to somebody who's considering moving into management. Make sure that your direct manager is somebody who is somebody who can give you advice in that role.
I think some people kind of get into management a different way too, where it's the they give you like a handful of cornmeal and a Swiss Army knife and a backpack, and they're like, good luck. And I don't know, Nick, I feel like, I don't know why I get the sense that that's your track that you were on when you came into management. So I'm curious to know what you do if in the situation where you're just given like a compass and a knapsack and you're told to navigate your way to becoming a successful manager.
I mean, it was a little bit, there weren't a lot of formal resources available, but I had spent a lot of time reading about management and leadership before I made that transition, because that was the direction I wanted my career to go. And I knew it was the direction I wanted my career to go. So I had already sort of sought out a lot of resources on my own. Camille's wonderful book was not out yet. It would have been incredibly helpful in that situation. But yeah, I think largely there's so many good resources out there now that weren't out there even 5 years ago that you can do some reasonable level of self-study now.
Coming back to your point, Blythe, though, I really like the idea that having a supportive manager is really key. And that there's a lot of flexibility in that even if you don't structure it perfectly, you can kind of keep coming back to the well and improving the structure over time. We've tried to do that as well when we've transitioned people from other roles into management where I'm at. And every time we do it, hopefully we're getting a little better at that process as well. And we leave behind a little process and a little instruction and a little, you know, there's never going to be a to-do list for being a successful manager, because then you're not a manager anymore. Because I think it's figuring that out that's the job. So I don't listen to NPR, but I have NPR on in my car because I want people to think that I'm smart. And I turned my car on this morning. So before I plug in my iPod to play my Harry Potter podcast, something came on this morning and they were talking about management and leadership, which I've never heard on the radio before. And they said something that struck me enough that it actually made me not listen to my Harry Potter podcast for about 5 minutes, which was very impressive. One of the people on this podcast, this nameless radio person, said, people generally get into leadership for one of two reasons. They want to do something or they want to be somebody. And it's, as you described your journey, Blythe, it was really impressive to me that you had in your mind a mission and goal for what you wanted to accomplish, and not a picture in your mind of what the status associated with managing people or leading or any of that stuff. And I think it's much more likely to, you're more likely to succeed in the role with that as your motivation. And I don't know if you've had managers in the past that, you know, you sensed one way or the other, but as you've sort of discovered more about what those things are you finding that rewarding? Are you finding it fun and challenging, or discovering new challenges? Or have you had times where you felt like, maybe I'm not, this wasn't exactly what I signed up for?
Yes, I do still find it rewarding. And I do still think that, so my goal was to sort of help the team, help deliver good products, and help the company, and ultimately help the end users have a tool that they can use and make it more useful for them. So I went into this role to make that easier for the team to do. And that's still my goal, and I still find that fulfilling. And I think that in this role, I've sort of decreased barriers for some of the individual contributors by, hey, I spent all day planning out this thing so that you could focus on writing the code for this other thing. Now let's talk about it. Does it line up with what you're expecting? How do we need to adjust? Great, now it's ready to go to get worked on. And the fact that we've been able to deliver a lot of new features as a team, I think that's the big change from, as an IC, you're like, oh, I delivered so much code and new features individually. But as a team, as a manager, I have to focus on the team's delivery and how the team is helping. And those sort of, their team wins, but that's how I sort of get my gratification now.
I think when I talk about moving from writing code to management, a word that I use a lot is shifting from direct productivity to meta productivity. And I think it's exactly that. It's figuring out how to be satisfied by building efficiency on a team versus seeing you pushing code out on a daily basis. And it's a struggle for a lot of managers.
Yeah, I was in an interview once for, I can't remember if it was an engineering manager or director role, a small startup, so basically the same thing. And talking to the head of engineering there, he said the best piece of advice he ever got was from his dad, who was a manager completely unrelated to tech. He said, if you're going to be a successful manager, you have to internalize. It's not your wins that count. It's your team's wins that count. And that has to be the thing that can bring you satisfaction, or you're never going to make it as a manager. I know that was a big shift for me, as I've managed, differing size teams, is shifting away from the, like, what have I contributed to? What have I helped enable? And even more meta than that, like, what has the team done that I haven't had any involvement in? And it just, hey, look, that's done. That was definitely a big shift for me.
Yeah, I explained to the person that ran operations at my last company that our jobs were shockingly similar, because I've done ops before, and the problem is, if you're managing people or you're in operations and you're doing a really great job, it looks like you're not doing anything often.
I had one head of a company leave. It was one of the C-suite folks that I rolled up to. And there was a grace period where he was on contract, and someone in the company in HR came over and said, hey, do we need to renew this contract? Have you used any other time? And I'm like, I haven't really talked to him in a few weeks. And they're like, yeah, I didn't think he did anything. And I'm like, well, no, that's a sign of a good leader. He set up an organization that he can leave and it doesn't just fall apart the day that he leaves. Like, he made a good, resilient organization that extends beyond you. And I think that goes from whether you're a CTO all the way down to an engineering manager. Can the people who report to you and the teams that roll up into you, can they function without you? You're adding value to it, but can you make yourself replaceable? And I think that's really the job of a good software developer as well. Like, you don't want to be doing the same thing over and over again, because, like, that's not software development and building tools. You need to be building the tools that work yourself out of the job and into the next job and solving the next problem. But you're just more hands-on, and it's a more direct, visceral thing when you're the individual contributor versus the manager who's helping enable that at a broader scale.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things that I've been focusing on. Recently, I was at RubyConf, and then I was on vacation for Thanksgiving, so I was out of the office for a long time. And the team actually released a few major features that went out to, you know, general availability to everyone that uses Fastly. And it really didn't need anything from me at all, and it launched smoothly, and that was even extra gratifying.
So that's what I was about to ask. And I don't know if you have more examples or more things that you could call back to, but you've been managing for a little over a year, and that's about the time scale. Like, it can take a year to 5 years to have some of the biggest impacts that you have on teams and people and processes or whatever. The time scale isn't days. It can be months or even years. Are you experiencing things now where you're starting to see some of the fruits of your labor, of some of the efforts that you've been putting in? Are you starting to see some of those wins now, the team level wins, as you called them? Are you starting to experience some of those now?
I think so. And I think a lot of that comes from sort of like building the team. So who you're hiring, the timeline for hiring, things like that, because over time, your overall delivery will be based on that. And team happiness, you know, team dynamics, that also is a big important part of sort of hiring. And then also as people leave the company, managing that. So I would say in terms of long time scales, that is the biggest impact. And of course, building trust with the team. You know, there's definitely things where I have projects where I'm like, hey, this is a big thing. Can you take this and run with it and figure out what we need to do and check back in? People are able to do that, and we have the trust that I can hand those things off to them. And that's also a way to build leadership ability in the people that are on my team too, because they're stretching themselves, they're gaining responsibility for things, and then very often they're actually nailing it. So that those are the types of things that I'm starting to feel now that I've been in this role for over a year.
What's the biggest surprise? The thing you didn't expect, and when it happened, you're like, oh, wow.
You know, even if you're good at things like communicating or like documenting things, taking notes, or planning things out, or technically capable. Even if you are good at those things, when you shift into a new role like management, you learn you're not as good as you thought. and you learn just how much more there is that you need to learn about things. So maybe you think you're good at communicating across the org, and you have to step into that role and you see, maybe I wasn't so good at that. This is an area for growth for me. And just recognizing that and then putting in the effort to continue that growth. That's, you know, those things keep coming as a surprise to me. Like, oh man, I wasn't as good as I thought I was. But the good news is this is an area for me to grow.
Yeah, it's a lot like being technical, right? Where, okay, I have encountered problems like this before. I know I can solve this. I know I can program my way out. Huh, this actually may have finally gotten me. I'm toast. And then you figure it out and then you feel great. But on a scale that happens much more publicly. So instead of feeling privately very stupid, now you basically blew it in front of your CEO instead of in front of your compiler, which feels worse. I can say objectively that feels worse.
Or the all hands. Or
yep. Yeah. Or you've done something that you thought was going to build trust with your team, and then it cost you trust with the team. And that's a lot more expensive than, a nil class error in your Ruby code. The stakes feel a little bit higher. So, I definitely understand that humbling surprise of thinking that something's going to come naturally to you and realizing that it's a thing that you have to practice.
Okay, so now that you've shifted into management, Bly, there's bound to be situations where you see something going south on the team and you want to be able just to jump in and fix it. How do you resist that temptation? How do you figure out the right way to move forward in those situations?
Yeah, that's interesting, especially for somebody who has written code and it wasn't that long ago. I could probably still write some code. How do I resist just writing the code to fix a feature? The biggest thing that prevents me from doing it is because I've been in that situation before where managers have stepped down and written code when maybe they shouldn't have. And I remember that perspective as I see and thinking, what are you doing in the code base? Like, this isn't a good use of your time, and there's somebody who could do this better. You should really delegate to them. So that experience and knowing about that is a way to help me remember I shouldn't do that. So the way I sort of compensate now is to think, okay, do I have somebody else that could be better for handling this situation? And if I do, I can ask that person. If I don't, then it's time to think of a backup plan. Like maybe fixing that situation has to take longer and I work on communicating that. But really knowing that I'm not the best person to fix that, that's the foundation. And there's definitely times when I think, you know, like, especially if we're understaffed on a project, or like, oh, if we just had one more Ruby developer, we could just knock out this feature and get it delivered. And I think, you know, maybe I could help the larger team by being an IC. By writing, like, let me switch to just writing code for like 3 months and deliver this big feature and it'll be a big win. But then again, I think rationally, that's not the best. Like, let's figure out another way. Let's talk about maybe getting headcount to hire for this role so that we can work on this. Or let's think of another way to solve this instead of me going back to writing code.
So it sounds like you keep refocusing on the goal at hand. Take a step back, look at the actual goal, and look at the best way that you could help solve the goal. And the answer keeps coming up. You know, you keep flipping heads or tails, and it keeps coming up heads where tails is go code. Like, nope, 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 nope. Okay. It looks like the answer is other stuff, managery stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's what you would want from a manager, from a good manager. I want you to think about the tools that you have as a manager and how you can help that way. That's why you went into this role to begin with.
I don't know. For me, all I have to do is look at my calendar, and that's enough to dissuade me from the notion that I could ever get anything done in code.
My way of managing it, which I'm not all that great at, is to make sure that the coding that I do is in such esoteric areas that I couldn't actually apply that at work. So I have some open source projects that I work on that are all bash. It's like, I'm not actually going to be able to use that anywhere. I have some code in Crystal, and it's like, Crystal will be pretty awesome in a couple of years, but we're not going to deploy anything in Crystal right now.
Yeah. That's not going to production.
Yeah.
I have one question. You got a good ways into your career as a developer before you transitioned into management. When do you think it's appropriate, or are there times that you don't think it's appropriate to transition into management? Is there a best time to transition? Should you have 15 years of experience? Does it matter at all?
Yeah, I don't have good answers for all those questions. But what I do think is that it's maybe a good idea to try to transition into management at a company that you've been at, like working as a developer for a little while. Because you've had time to build trust with the people in that organization and on your team already. They know you're technically capable. You know, they know that you actually have these skills that make you potentially a good manager. And so when you step into that role, it's likely that they can already envision you in that role. I would imagine that trying to go from an individual contributor at one company to a management role at a different company would be pretty difficult because of the building of the trust, both technical and personal. And so as a manager, you doubt yourself a lot. Like, am I doing the right thing? Did I make the right choice? Do people think I don't know what I'm doing? You know, you have these doubts. And I think starting at a new company in combination with those doubts would be really tough. And what transitioning at Fastly has allowed me to know is like, well, these people know that I can do these things. And so it allows me a little comfort of like, okay, I might not be super sharp as a manager yet. I'm working on that, but I've built this trust with the team around me so that they know like, okay, they know I'm going to work on it and get better.
I think that's a huge challenge, depending on the size of the company. Cause I've worked at many a startup, as I was trying to move more and more into leadership roles, where I was told point blank, you're just too valuable as a contributor. It's like, well, that's great. That's just not what I'm looking to do right now. And at smaller startups, there ends up being a lot of, depending on the growth trajectory of the company, it's kind of out if you want to move up, which is unfortunate because you end up losing a lot of that, the benefit you have from having a good cohesive team that works well together.
I want to call back to something Blythe said earlier, though, along those lines. I think as a manager and as we look at the people on our teams that might be trending that direction in their careers, there's things we can do as managers to let people start to get a taste of that to see if it might be a fit for them that don't require that formal role shift, like putting somebody in a team lead role for a project just to let them get a taste of it. I think that's a reasonable answer to that, even in a small startup that may not be able to afford to lose a key contributor full time.
I've heard the term quarterbacking used. A person that is actually about to come manage with me used that in our interview. He said, yeah, instead of having a formal team lead role, we have somebody take on a project, and their job is to make sure that the project completes successfully. So they help design the technical solution from the beginning, collaborate with the product team, and you know, herd the cats that are necessary to herd along the way, and take some sense of responsibility of getting this thing over the line, which actually is a lot of what management is about. Just looking at all the different pieces that might get in the way of achieving a goal and becoming personally attached to that goal in some way. Like you said, giving people a taste of that is a really great first step to actually suss out the people that might be interested. Something else I wanted to ask as one of our last things we'll talk about. We probably won't end on this note, but I do want to believe that if I were to try something, that it wouldn't be the end of my career entirely if I tried it and didn't like it. So at what point do you know whether to stick it out or to throw in the towel on attempting to become a manager and realizing, I don't know if this is for me or not? How do you make that call? At what point do you decide?
I think it's a really personal decision, and you have to think, like, is this a thing that I can do sustainably? Am I happy in this role? Or is it making me unhappy? Is it taxing me to stay in this management role? And maybe that just depends on the current situation, because I've actually had managers that I thought were excellent managers, but they weren't supported at the time. And so they were getting overwhelmed, they were trying to do too much, and they've sort of noped out of management. They said, I'm going back, I want to be an architect. But I still think they would be a great manager, and just in a different situation, I think they could be successful and could be happy. So that's not to say they weren't a good manager, it wasn't a good fit in that situation. So I think if you are in your role and it's taking more energy from you than it's giving, it may be a time to step back.
Yeah, that's a great point, that it's not necessarily the end of this journey for you. It's just that these circumstances weren't the right environment to maybe find out if this was a thing that you like. And so it may take more than one attempt.
So one question I have for you, if you could go back in time, if you could rewind over the past year and give yourself one or two pieces of advice that you think would have helped you along the way, what would those be? What would you like to have known before you embarked on this journey?
Yeah, what would I tell old Blythe, past Blythe? I would definitely say this is a beginning of a journey. You're not going to know everything. You're not going to be perfect at everything. You're going to learn over time. And the journey is just gaining that experience. Don't sort of expect yourself to know everything already, like as soon as you start on day one. Sort of embrace that journey and growth. And I would also probably really emphasize the people relationships in all directions. You need to have good relationships with the people that are on your team that are helping you deliver these products and features. You need to have relationships with your peers. They're going to help you learn how to fit into this new role or help you across teams to help deliver things. And then also you need to have good relationships with the people above you in your organization. Because ultimately that's going to be how you influence the organization and also help your team grow. So building those relationships in all directions is really important. And you should just be working on that as soon as you start a job, essentially.
This is the second time I've heard almost that exact same thing mentioned in 2 days. I was listening to a podcast. This journalist was saying that she had spent all this time into sourcing, building relationships with her sources and that. And it wasn't until she realized she needed to put that much effort into building the relationships internally at her company that she really started to see progress in her career. Because she realized, wait, I've got to put that same amount of effort into getting to know the people around me as I do to doing my job, the thing that's immediately in front of me.
Blythe, your message about that relationship aspect, but also understanding that this is a journey, I think is really important and really underserved, because I think people think of achieving a manager title as a ring that they grab and that they've achieved something by grabbing the title. But it's like fundraising at the company, right? If a company raises $10 million, yes, I understand that's very difficult and that is an accomplishment in itself. But it is actually, you just dug a really big hole and now you got to build something on it. So you're not grabbing a ring, you're grabbing a shovel. You know, you got work to do. And the journey can be really wonderful and it can be really rewarding if you have the ability to step back and look at the impact of your work over a longer time scale than your commit log. So I think that's a really great message to end on. And I want to thank you for your time today. I want to thank you for sharing your story with us. If people want to find you online, how can they find you?
Probably the best way is Twitter. You can find me at Blithe on Twitter, B-L-I-T-H-E.
That's a good one. You got a good one. All right. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. I'm Brandon Hayes. You can find me on Twitter. I'm TeViking pretty much everywhere.
I'm Nick Means. You can find me at NMeans on Twitter.
And I'm Travis Swicegood, and I am at T Swicegood just about everywhere.
And if you like the show, you got something out of it, the best way you can help is to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have any questions, thoughts, or suggestions, you can tweet at us. We are at Managing Up Show on Twitter. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us. Have a great week, and we'll see you again soon.
I went to high school in Port Aransas, Texas. Ooh. Which is like on the little...
Port A.
Yeah. I love Port A.
You take the ferry over.
It's nicer than Port Arthur, but the rap is better in Port Arthur. Not the hip-hop scene is not as good in Port Aransas.
It's very true. It's Port Aransas.
Better beaches, worse music.